The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon and welcome to the weekend. It is Friday, July 30th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Joining me to my left, piloting the ship of the show, the pirate Ganja John.
Yar, Army Pirates here.
Howdy, everybody.
Yes, we're loving the new Dan Michaels voiceovers that we have here. We got kind of a special show today. You can probably tell that we're a little more casual than usual, sporting an Herb Age Designs, Herb Age University shirt. My good friend Scott Gordon and Herb Age Designs. Check
them
out.
You got to get me one of those.
Yeah, we got to get some more Herb Age shirts out here on the show. This is going to be a new thing I'm going to do since I've gone back to the jacket. Every Friday, we're going to feature a t-shirt from one of our sponsors supporters, yeah. The events that we go to. Because otherwise, they're just taking up room in my closet.
Exactly.
There's no good reason.
Yeah, there's all kinds of people who support us out there.
There we go. California Potheads, that's a good group out there, too. And this is also a special show for another reason, and that is because we're kind of just flying alone today.
Yeah, it's special, but not in a fun way.
Yeah, special kind of in
like
a short bus
way.
Yeah. Cannabis Carrie is not with us today. She can't join us, so I'm going to be doing the news. We'll just take the normal news headlines.
Wing it.
And read the, we're going to wing it. That's right. We're doing it live.
We're doing it live.
And we have no interview for the day. It's just us. So coming up on today's show, and that's not a bad thing. Stay tuned.
Don't leave.
We're not trying to convince you to leave or anything. No. We're going to have a good time on today's show. Kind of casual Friday. We're going to do the news. And then at 20 after, we've got some Daily Toker tunes, some Rockin' Friday
U.S.
music.
Coast Guard. I can't talk.
You can't even say it. U.S. Customs Coast Guard Dope Dog with George Clinton. We're going to bring that out from the vaults. Then at 30 past the hour, we've got a case of Reefer Madness we need to uncover just north of us in the Great White North. National Post's Barbara Kay is at it again. An article she published this month that I just have to expose the Reefer Madness on. And at 45 past the hour, we'll do some radical ranting. A great article in the Alternate from John Kelly on drug testing, specifically the DL test that most police officers use to initially detect drugs. Well, as you can guess, it's highly unreliable, but the personal stories behind it are what are going to make you cringe. So all of that and more coming up on today's Normal Show Live. Remember, you can catch the show in replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9 Pacific, or download it straight from our website, stash.normal.org, or subscribe to us on iTunes. I'm at Radical Russ on Twitter, at Ganja John on Twitter, and we'll see you in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
the war on drugs has been a part of failure. And I think that we need to rethink and formalize our law.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now, the Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500.
Darnell Show Live will bring you exclusive live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest on the third weekend of August. You'll probably remember more of it than those of us attending.
Today I was walking down the street, to my surprise, yeah.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Cannabis Carry can't be with us today. I'm Radical Russ. California Legislative Analyst's Office rejects claims of Prop 19 opponents. Sacramento, California. An independent analysis of Proposition 19, the Regulate, Control, and Tax Cannabis Initiative of 2010 by the California Legislative Analyst's Office, or LAO, finds that the measure would not undermine workplace safety or highway safety standards and would likely yield, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars, end quote, in annual revenue. The findings directly contradict ballot arguments against the measure, which claim that the proposal will not raise state tax revenue and will, quote, make California's highways, workplaces, and communities less safe, end quote. According to the LAO report, quote, the measure would not change existing laws that prohibit driving under the influence of drugs or that prohibit possessing marijuana on the grounds of elementary, middle, and high schools. Employers would retain existing rights to address consumption of marijuana that impairs an employee's job performance, end quote. Regarding the measure's proposed fiscal impact, the report states, quote, the measure could result in savings to the state and local governments by reducing the number of marijuana offenders incarcerated in state prisons and county jails, as well as the number placed under county probation or state parole supervision. These savings could reach several tens of millions of dollars annually, end quote. Authors further conclude, quote, the state and local governments could receive additional revenues from taxes, assessments, and fees from marijuana-related activities allowed under this measure. To the extent that a commercial marijuana industry developed in the state, we estimate that the state and local governments could eventually collect hundreds of millions of dollars annually in additional revenues, end quote. California voters will likely decide on the measure this November. According to the most recently released statewide poll on the measure, 52% of Californians support Prop 19, while only 36% oppose it. For more information, please contact Paul Armentano, Normal Deputy Director, at paul@normal.org. Full text of the LAO analysis appears online at www.lao.ca.gov. California. Oakland City Council approves regulations for first-in-the-nation industrial marijuana production facilities. Oakland, California. Oakland City Council members last week approved legislation authorizing the private large-scale production of medical marijuana by commercial providers. Under the measure, the city will license 4 production warehouses where marijuana would be grown, packaged, and processed for medical use. The privately owned facilities would not be limited in size. However, the regulations will require applicants to possess a minimum of $3 million worth of insurance, hire security, and pay a $211,000 annual permit fee to the city. Members of the city council said that they will vote this fall on similar regulations to oversee the licensing of smaller size grow operations. Voters in neighboring Berkeley will decide on a similar municipal measure in November that seeks to license up to 6 area medical marijuana production facilities. In a separate Oakland City Council vote this week, members rejected a proposal to tax medical marijuana cultivators and dispensaries, instead electing to put the measure before voters this November. For more information, please contact Dale Gehringer, California Normal Coordinator, at 415-563-5858. Washington, D.C. Congress won't overturn district's new marijuana dispensary law. Washington, D.C. Members of Congress have declined to overrule legislation passed by the D.C. City Council in May, authorizing the establishment of regulated medical marijuana dispensaries in the District of Columbia. Congressional lawmakers had up to 30 working days to reject the law. That review period officially ended earlier this week. In June, a pair of Republican House members, Representatives Jason Chaffetz of Utah and Jim Jordan of Ohio, introduced legislation to overturn D.C.'s medical marijuana law, stating, quote, "Marijuana is a psychotropic drug classified under Schedule 1 of the Federal Controlled Substances Act as having, quote, high potential for abuse, no currently accepted medical use treatment in the United States, and a lack of accepted safety for use of the drug under medical supervision," end quote. Their effort failed to gain any significant support in Congress. Under the new law, D.C. Health Department officials will oversee creation of up to 8 facilities to dispense medical cannabis to authorized patients. Medical dispensaries would be limited to growing no more than 95 plants on site at any one time. Both nonprofit and for-profit organizations will be eligible to operate the dispensaries. Qualifying D.C. patients will be able to obtain medical cannabis at these facilities, but will not be permitted under the law to grow their own medicine. A separate provision enacted as part of the 2011 D.C. budget calls for the retail sales of medical cannabis to be subject to the district's 6% sales tax rate. Low-income patients will be allowed to purchase medical marijuana at greatly reduced cost under the plan. It will likely be several months before health officials begin accepting applications from the public to operate the city's medical marijuana production and distribution centers. The newly enacted legislation amends Initiative 59, a 1998 D.C. medical marijuana ballot measure that garnered 69% of the vote. City lawmakers had been barred from instituting the measure because of a congressional ban on prohibiting district officials from liberalizing municipal marijuana laws. Congress finally lifted the ban in 2009. For more information, please contact Alan St. Pierre, Normal Executive Director, or Keith Stropp, Normal Legal Counsel, at 202-483-5500. Congress, House passes the National Criminal Justice Commission Act. On Tuesday, congressional representatives passed by a voice vote H.R. 5143, the House version of the National Criminal Justice Commission Act of 2010. Normal first blogged about this federal legislation back in November and encouraged supporters to contact their members of Congress in favor of this much-needed reform. This week, the House did their part. Now it is up to the Senate to do theirs. Said the measure's House sponsor, Representative Bill Delahunt, Democrat of Massachusetts, quote, "Today our prison population is expanding at an alarming rate, with costs to the taxpayers that are unsustainable. This bill passed will assess the current crisis, reverse these disturbing trends, and help save taxpayer money," end quote. House Bill 5143 is a companion bill to S-714, championed by Senator Jim Webb, Democrat of Virginia. Senate Bill 714 will establish a National Criminal Justice Commission to hold public hearings and, quote, "undertake a comprehensive review of the criminal justice system, including federal, state, local and tribal governments' criminal justice costs, practices, and policies. The commission shall make findings regarding such review and recommendations for changes in oversight, policies, practices, and laws designed to prevent, deter, and reduce crime and violence, improve cost effectiveness, and ensure the interests of justice at every step of the criminal justice system," end quote. In January, members of the Senate Judiciary passed S-714. The measure awaits action by the full Senate. Hopefully, this week's House vote will spur the Senate into action. It's been many years since a federally appointed commission has taken an objective look at American criminal justice policies, and it's been nearly 40 years since federal lawmakers have undertaken a critical examination of U.S. drug policy. Senator Webb articulately explains why this examination is long overdue. Quote, "America's criminal justice system has deteriorated to the point where it is a national disgrace. The United States has by far the world's highest incarceration rate. With 5% of the world's population, our country now houses nearly 25% of the world's reported prisoners. Drug offenders, most of them passive users or minor dealers, are swamping our prisons. Justice statistics also show that 47.5% of all drug arrests in our country in 2007 were for marijuana offenses. Nearly 60% of the people in state prisons serving significant time for drug offense had no history of violence or of any significant selling activity. African Americans, who make up about 12% of the total U.S. population, accounted for 37% of those arrested on drug charges, 59% of those convicted, and 74% of all drug offenders sentenced to prison. It is incumbent on our national leadership to find a way to fix our prison system. End quote. Normal supporters can play a role in this fix by contacting their U.S. senators and urging them to support Senate Bill 714, the National Criminal Justice Commission Act. All right, that's our news, and we've got some time for some commentary on a few of these stories. Thanks for hanging out here, special Normal Show Live. First of all, on the criminal justice bill that we're talking about passing the House, this is fantastic news that we are finally getting around to addressing the injustice of marijuana laws in this country. But again, they can't come out and say what it really is, right? They have to couch it in something bigger. They have to say it's about prison reform. It's about reforming criminal justice in general. And the only thing that bothers me about that is I'm afraid it gives them too much latitude to kind of play around and negotiate and compromise, especially when we start talking about getting to the level of the White House. I mean, this week I told you about the crack cocaine disparity, and while we don't, you know, talk about cocaine so much on this show, it does kind of illustrate some of the racism of the drug war, where the way it had been is that it was a 500 grams of powder cocaine got you the same mandatory minimum as 5 grams of crack cocaine. Of course, powder cocaine is typically used by affluent suburban whites, whereas crack cocaine is used usually by poor urban minorities, just generally speaking. So this had long been cited by those of us in drug reform as a glaring example of the mandatory minimums enacted by a Democratic Congress in 1986, by the way, that have been so racially disproportionate in this war on drugs. It's just a glaring, it's just obvious to anyone that looks at it. Because really, powder cocaine and crack cocaine are cocaine. They're the same thing, right? Crack has things added to it to help it to burn easier. But chemically speaking and from an addiction standpoint, they are exactly the same drug. But of course, the white folks get 500 grams of it before they go with the same penalty as the black folks using 5 grams of crack. Well, anyway, President Obama had campaigned. And in his campaign, this was one of the promises he made, was to eliminate the crack powder disparity. Eliminate the disparity. But that's not what happened. In what recently passed and what President Obama is about to sign, they upped the threshold on the mandatory minimum for crack from 5 grams to 28 grams. So we got up from 5 grams to about an ounce, right? Which, if you do the math, they didn't change anything about the 500 grams of powder cocaine, so now it's a 500 to 28 ratio instead of a 500 to 5 ratio. That means it's only 18 times worse than instead of it being 100 times worse. And Chris Weigant, who's this writer out at Huffington Post, put it perfectly. It'd be like if after the Civil War, President Lincoln came out and said, okay, from now on, black people are 4/5 of a person, instead of the 3/5 compromise that had been in the Constitution. I mean, yeah, it's a step in the right direction, right? Yeah, don't get me wrong. Anytime Congress is lessening the penalties or raising the thresholds when we're talking about drug policy, that's a good thing. Let's not, you know, let's not throw that away. But still, it does make it kind of hard to get behind it and really trumpet it, right? It really makes it hard as a drug reformer to say, yay, our laws are slightly less racist than they were yesterday. Woohoo! You know, it's like, look, if you campaign to eliminate it! Or change it altogether. Lower the threshold, if you will, for the white powder cocaine. Right? Make it 28 grams of powder cocaine, 28 grams of crack cocaine. Now you've eliminated the disparity. Of course, we'd have to be against that too, because you're lowering that and causing more people to become criminals. And it is a big, messy kind of thing to have to deal with here, but to get excited about the 18-to-1 disparity just still points out how we have so much more work left to do. Now, on a couple of these other stories, I won't have time to get to those, but we will have Cannabis Carrie back here for the news stories next week. And don't forget that tomorrow we'll be at the Cannabis Cafe bringing you live exclusive coverage with our remote studio.
Woo!
Yeah, we're going to have ourselves a good time.
Russ and I actually, we went back there yesterday and we played some arcade games and some shuffleboard. We had a great time.
Shuffleboard and air hockey, and I did destroy John in air hockey.
Absolutely. Oh, he beat a one-eyed guy.
I beat the one-eyed guy, so yeah. I got that going for me, which is good.
Speaking of fun, though.
Yeah.
Break time.
Break time, like we're not having a break already.
Seriously.
Oh, we are flying without a net today and without a Cannabis Carry. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live Chat is only for registered Stick'em members who've sent us a friend request. Chat is a privilege, and those who abuse it will be removed. For a list of unacceptable behavior in chat, send a private message to any moderator.
Cool out. Cool out. Cool out.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
All my friends know the low rider.
This is Normal Show Live. Hello. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today, we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday. Our segment features the best of rock, metal, punk, and jam band music. Brought to you by Eric Smokes Bud in Madison, Wisconsin. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, and like I said, we're truly flying alone today. It's just me and Ganja John.
It's just us.
So we get to go to the musical vaults and pull up any old song that we like. And
we love this one.
We love this one. This is one of my favorites. George Clinton, of course, was the form of Parliament Funkadelic back in the 70s, and such great music as a bass player and a lover of funk. I've always been a big fan of George Clinton. I've seen him at least, I think, three or four times. I know I've seen him in Denver and in Boise.
I saw him at a fair once.
Yeah, at a fair.
It was awesome. Oh, it was a county fair.
How did the country folks that go to the county fair react to seeing dreadlock multicolored?
It was interesting. This year at the local county fair where I'm from, Billy Idol and Scorpion.
Scorpions. So,
yeah, Scorpions. Yeah,
Scorpions. Yeah. Rock You Like a Hurricane.
Yeah. We're going, Russ.
We're going. We got to be there.
Anyway,
we're going out to the vaults here to bring up this one. This is George Clinton talking about the poor canines that get tragically addicted to the drugs they're supposed to sniff out. It's George Clinton with U.S. Customs Coast Guard Dope Dog.
Doing the doggy style. U.S. Custom Coast Guard Dope Dog, nicknamed Buster. Like most dope sniffing dogs, he's got a habit, trained to have the habit. Pick up the tracks of the traffic, though, trapping like a rabbit up the coastline. K-9, control substance retriever, receiver of the golden nose award for leading to the cash, cashing in on the stash. Now he's in line for his issue of a booty. Never do he do a line in the line of duty. He's a dope dog. U.S. Custom Coast Guard Dope Dog, King Sizzle Smell, tracking the telltale trails of cartel dope boats, big dope, never a gram or OZ, kilo, too low key, gotta be tons of P-blow, bells of lumbo, one other dog sniffing one another's tails, he can track the profits from a dope sale straight to the stink account, big banks, banking on laundered dirty money, not stinking, he follow his nose, and as the wind blows, he get a whiff, he take a sniff,
dope dog.
Had some drugs, CIAIO. And with those drugs, he bought some arms,
C-I-A-I-O. It was a bang, bang here and a snort, snort there. Here, bang, there, snort, bang, and snorts everywhere. Mac Uncle starts a war. C-I-A-I-O. But the war on drugs is hell on a dope dog nose. It smells where the nose goes when the dough's closed. And the dealer wanna hide the dope in the booty, in the twat. Then the squad and make the dog sniff his bowel foul as they fart in his face. Damn, for a shitty half gram, the dope dog. Custom Coast Guard Dope Dog, nicknamed Bust'em. Like most dope sniffing dogs, you gotta have it, trained to have the habit. Pick up the tracks of the traffickers, track them like a rabbit up the coastline. Canine control substance retriever, receiver of the Golden Nose Award.
The toxic waste comes a box that wastes no time. A genetically improved smell capability. The long and wagging tales of the possibility of clone canine. Conceived under the influence of toxic waste, the doctors, computer bugs, debugging devices, and vice versa, and various viruses. And until his retirement, no mention. No requirement, no awareness, pension for the upkeep, the keeping up of the habit. The system have a habit of making sure you get a habit that can't be kept up with unless you're a dope dog.
An undercover knock with a bark, he took a bite out of crime. Posing as a CNI dog, he bit the blind. The man with the cane made a coat. Sure as the dope boats float, the media goes comatose. Unrelated over-the-counter overdose, now become drug-related. Aided and abetted by a lot of apprehension and indifference. The bigger the headache, the bigger the pill. Take your medicine, cause you're gonna be ill. When I tell you the deal on dope, there's more profit in pretending that we're stopping it than selling it. Selling out, we're in from the shock of a lifetime. Stopping, we might find faces in prime time. Faces of yours and mine. Over the counter, under the counter. On the counter, the drugs is not the drugs. They drag you through the mud. It's the money, it ain't funny.
Comac Uncle has a bank. Drugs are sure to flow. C-C-I-C-I-A-D-E-A-I-O.
U.S. Custom Coast Guard Dope Dog, the nickname Custom, like most dope sniffing dog. Gotta have it, trained to have the habit. Pick up the tracks of the traffickers, track them like a rabbit up the coastline. Canine, control substance retriever, receiver of the Golden Nose Award. For leaning to the cash, cashing in on the stash. Now he's in line for his ziggy of the booty. Never do a line in the line of duty. He's a dope dog.
A dope dog.
He can smell the cargo on the boats and blame the trains and things.
Dope dog.
He can smell the cargo on the boats and blame the trains and things.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
All right, time for a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. On Friday, July 30th, the Atwood Summerfest is taking place in Madison, Wisconsin. Madison Normal will be tabling there. Check out madisonnormal.org. On Saturday, July 31st, it's Cousin Kenny's birthday. Happy birthday, CK Jr. Also, the Ken Gorman Memorial Rally will be taking place on the west steps of the Colorado Capitol, Mile High Normal of Denver. They will be there, as well as Colorado Normal. They are joining to protest marijuana prohibition in Colorado and across the United States in their monthly Ken Gorman Memorial Rally. West steps of the Capitol, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Also, the Great Lakes Compassion Club Music Festival is taking place in Lakota, Michigan this weekend, Saturday, July 31st. A huge festival featuring music, speakers, vendors, and more. The information will be posted up on our calendar at normal.org/calendar. Also, of course, tomorrow, the big event, Saturday, July 31st, 4:20 p.m. Pacific Time, the grand reopening of the Oregon Normal World Famous Cannabis Cafe.
Whoop, whoop.
Oh, it's going to be a good time. We will be there at live.normal.org, broadcasting from inside the beautiful 4,000-square-foot facility. Check out the photos. I've got some interior photos and the Google Street View of the location up at our blog, stash.normal.org. It's really, really amazing.
It is amazing. And I just want to tell all you local people out there who are going to come out to this, it doesn't look like much from the outside. It looks like a really small building, but it's not. It's huge.
Yeah, we are below a strip mall, and the facilities below are the same size as the size of the strip mall.
It's so, the whole strip mall. It's the whole footprint of the strip mall.
Yeah, so if you check out the Google Street View and you can see how big that strip mall is, that's how big the cafe is below ground.
Right.
In
the downstairs. It's absolutely beautiful.
And it's not like you're going to someone's basement either. Once you're down there...
There's actually windows. They don't actually look out to anything, but they have blinds on them.
Yeah, they built windows with blinds on them to give you that feel that you weren't underground, and it's completely furnished. $7,000 or $8,000 worth of furniture down there.
Beautiful.
And, a tournament air hockey table, bar shuffleboard.
About 30 arcade games in one.
A billiards table with even a nine-ball rack.
Nine-ball rack, classy. It's very,
very
nice, classy.
Very classy. So check it out. We'll be there tomorrow at 4:20 p.m. You can also get more information at usacannabiscafe.org. Now, on Sunday, August 1st, Sunday, we've got the Normal Louisiana online chat meeting, and you can get more information at normallouisiana.org. They do this every month to get folks together and organized in the state of Louisiana for the news and events that are happening for their cannabis community. So check those out. There's also a Find a Primary Medical Marijuana Center party going on in Denver at Castleman's Bar and Venue, 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock in Denver, Colorado on Sunday, August 1st. For more information, check out milehighnormal.org. And to find out information on all of these events happening across the country, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at normal, NORML.org.
Is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. 33 after the hour, and I've been talking about how I've been catching up on the emails that I missed and some of the stories that I missed during my vacation and all my travels around California for the various events that I've gone to. And this is one that came at the beginning of this month, beginning of July, in Canada's National Post. And it's a columnist, an opinion column from a columnist by the name of Barbara Kay. Now, I've written about Barbara Kay in the past, some of her Reefer Madnesses caught my attention, but I just wanted to come back and give her more attention because, you know, she certainly deserves it for some of these crazy views that she's trying to convince the Canadian people of. Her article was entitled "More Warnings About the Dangers of Pot," and so this latest one is about the marijuana induced psychosis. Her theory here is always has to do about marijuana is going to lead some people into schizophrenia or psychosis, a subject we've talked about many times with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and debunked so many times it's hardly even worth mentioning anymore. Needless to say, the worldwide rates of schizophrenia remain at about 1%, no matter how much cannabis use goes up and down. A 10-year study in the UK found no rise or fall in schizophrenia or psychosis admissions, even as cannabis use went skyrocketing in Britain. So we've debunked it many times, but I just wanted to get to some of her framing in her arguments here that is in need of being addressed here. When she wrote about the marijuana-induced psychosis back in 2008, she writes how she got razzed by her colleagues and asked why marijuana should remain illegal while alcohol and tobacco, which even she admits is more noxious in its effects to the general public. Why should marijuana be illegal while alcohol and tobacco are legal? And it turns out she has two good reasons: history and economics. So here's the quote from Barbara Kay. Quote, "The use of alcohol stretches back over the millennia as an integral part of human civilization and remains, when used properly, a prime ingredient of civilized conviviality and positive social bonding. Alcohol in moderation is not only a social lubricant, it is good for one's health." End quote. Okay, so that's the old history argument. That's the, you know, people don't drink to get drunk, they drink to have fun. In fact, this goes all the way back to Art Linkletter and Richard Nixon in the 70s. This is a transcript from a meeting between Richard Nixon and Art Linkletter. And for the younger listeners out there, Art Linkletter is, he's a well-beloved comedian and host back from your parents' day, right? So,
Like a Jay Leno, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a Johnny Carson.
I'm trying to think of a modern comparison. There's not a really good modern comparison.
Yeah, not really.
He was famous for a line that he had, you know, kids say the darndest things, and it was all cute. I guess America's Funniest Videos, Tom Bergeron, maybe.
Tom Bergeron. Bill Cosby, maybe.
In that, okay, so Family Guy. You know, just put that in your head, right? Law and Order Family type person. So here's the transcripts between Linkletter and Nixon. Linkletter tells Nixon, quote, "There's a great difference between alcohol and marijuana." Nixon replies, "What is it? The president wants to know." That's me doing Dan Aykroyd doing Nixon, by the way.
I like that.
Thank you. "When people smoke marijuana," Linkletter explains, "they smoke it to get high. In every case, when most people drink, they drink to be sociable." "That's right. That's right," Nixon says. "A person does not drink to get drunk. A person drinks to have fun." End quote. So, yeah, that's the same argument Nixon tried to argue, and Barbara Kay is trying to argue it now. And it is kind of funny because, like, a year later, Art Linkletter changed his tune. According to the New York Times, after much thought and study, he concluded that the drug was relatively harmless. Now, regardless, Nixon and Kay are just flat out wrong about the idea that people only drink to be social and they don't drink to get drunk. Plenty of people are drinking to get drunk.
I know lots of alcoholics who don't drink to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Not much fun to them, no. And most particularly, the people drinking to get drunk are the very young people she's so concerned would be suffering from this marijuana-induced psychosis. According to the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency here in America, 8% of youth aged 12 to 17 engaged in binge drinking. And that's defined as 5 or more drinks in a row, or as I used to call it, Friday night, in the past 30 days. Twice as many teens, 16%, report experiencing a blackout from alcohol use.
I can attest to that.
Yeah. Now, I'm not arguing that we should prohibit the responsible use of alcohol for adults in order to protect the children from irresponsible use, but that's exactly what Barbara Kay is supporting for marijuana. Everything she praises about alcohol, you know, thousands of years of human use, it's integral to civilization, social bonding, it's good for your health in moderation, are praises that go 10 times as much for cannabis use. So it's rather kooky to criminally prohibit marijuana and then claim its lack of social integration is the reason to keep it prohibited. Right? Yeah. The reason we don't accept it into our society is because we made it illegal, so we can't accept it into our society? Circular logic. But it's even more ghoulish to support the legality of alcohol and tobacco with economic arguments. Barbara Kay continues with her support, you know, why alcohol and tobacco are legal and marijuana shouldn't be. Here's her second argument. "As for tobacco, if we knew hundreds of years ago what we know now about its effects, never good, always bad, I would have argued against legalizing it as well. But as with alcohol, it's not so easy to disband an industry as huge and profitable as tobacco on the grounds that it is unhealthy. There is too much at stake economically. So we're stuck with it. Okay, so if a substance makes the government a ton of money and creates a ton of jobs, it really doesn't matter that it kills 400,000 North Americans a year, does it? See, if marijuana wanted Barbara Kay's support, all the money it generates and jobs it creates would need to be legal and taxed. Then she wouldn't mind being stuck with it. But since marijuana's effects are usually good, rarely bad, Barbara Kay wants to stick with criminal prohibition. It's insane. Now, she goes on to support this by talking about teenagers that are prone to psychosis or schizophrenia and studies that supposedly claim that this is that marijuana is going to exacerbate that syndrome. Here's her quote from this article. The latest studies confirm that the risk of marijuana-induced psychosis is real, and the most at-risk users are teenagers. Regular teenage pot smokers seem to have double the risk of developing paranoia, hallucinations, and psychotic breaks 5 years later. Well, I went and looked at the article, the studies that Barbara Kay was linking to, and in those studies, they talk about one of the people in the studies, a young man by the name of Don Corbeil. Corbeil had been smoking pot since he was 14, a habit that escalated to about 10 joints a day. He started hearing voices, and at one point, Corbeil thought he was the Messiah. Police found him one day talking incoherently and brought him to the hospital, where he was eventually diagnosed with drug-induced psychosis.
I smoked that strain.
Yeah. Corbeil had dabbled in other drugs, such as acid and ecstasy, but marijuana was his mainstay.
What?
Yeah. So, okay, we got a kid who's been smoking weed since he was 14, 10 joints a day, and experiencing a psychotic break. It really doesn't seem like prohibition kept the weed away from him, did it?
No.
No, it doesn't seem like it helped to prevent him from going into this problem, but supposedly keeping it illegal is going to prevent others from ending up in this problem. And also, she didn't note that in the article itself, it quotes, says, who exactly at risk remains hazy, and the study, however, did not determine whether the drug prompted symptoms or was used to self-medicate. It also noted, the vast majority of pot smokers will not go psychotic. But the warnings that a small subset of young teenagers already susceptible to mental illness that smoke 10 joints a day might have an increased risk of psychosis is enough for Barbara Kay to lock me up for smoking a joint at home.
Especially if they're taking acid.
And ecstasy. Yeah, exactly. So I took a look at, and we go on here to the rest of Barbara Kay's writing. She continues on and says, according to the Canadian Agency for Mental Health, more than 30% of Ontario's grade 10 students, you know, sophomores, reported cannabis use in the past year. Add to that the worries about the vastly increased strength of today's marijuana. Since the 1970s, mainstream marijuana has seen a 25-fold increase in tetrahydrocannabinol, cannabis's psychoactive ingredient. Well, yeah, that's the old pot 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. Look, I've seen the clothes, the hairstyles, and listened to the music of the 1970s. There is no way our parents' weed was 25 times weaker than what we're smoking now.
Example one, bell bottoms. You had to be high.
Example one right there. In fact, the article that Kay is cribbing, that Ontario high school sophomore data, it actually says, and what they're smoking is not their hippie dad's doobie. Growers have bred more potent pot, more than doubling the amounts of THC, the psychoactive ingredient, and decreasing the cannabidiol, a protective ingredient. Double, 25-fold. It's all the same, right? You know, 25 times worse, 2 times worse. Close enough, right?
Typical. I love my THC content to be 700%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, if the THC content is averaging around 10% today, 25 times weaker than that would make it what?
Hemp.
Hemp, exactly. All right, now if Kay is really worried about the kids and their access to pot, maybe she should explain to us why what we're doing now is led to 3 in 10 sophomores smoking it this year. I looked up some other Canadian studies here. According to the Canadian Center for Substance Abuse, the number of tobacco smokers aged 15 to 19 works out to about 3 in 20.
A?
They also found that about 1 in 20 15 to 19-year-olds have an unhealthy dependence on alcohol, eh?
Come on, you hoser.
Alcohol and tobacco. 3 in 20 for tobacco, 1 in 20 for alcohol, 3 in 10 for cannabis. It seems like the substances that are legal for adults and very strictly carded and regulated are harder for the kids to get a hold to.
Surprise, surprise.
You know, it's not that marijuana is harmless and that's why we should legalize it. It's that we found that the prohibition of a very harmful substance, like alcohol, was a worse problem than the minority of people who use it irresponsibly or unhealthily. We found that the strict regulation of an addictive substance like tobacco has had remarkable success in reducing its use. So why wouldn't we try that solution with a substance that is far less harmful and addictive than those other two? So, Barbara Kay, National Post, we've got it listed up on our blog at stash.normal.org. That's just more reefer madness. People are realizing now that marijuana is safer than both alcohol and tobacco, and whatever laws we have for those ought to work just fine for marijuana, if not more lenient laws. All right, Radical Russ, we're coming back here in just a minute with some more.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. White Talon, stop looking at me like that. You're creeping me out.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Normal National Conference 2010, September 9th through the 11th, in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Portland? Is this a typo? Oh, I get it. For more details, see norml.org/conference.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 after the hour, and time for a little bit of radical ranting, and I'm going to defer here a lot of this to an excellent article written in Alternet, alternet.org, by John Kelly, entitled, Has the Most Common Marijuana Test Resulted in Tens of Thousands of Wrongful Convictions? Now, I ranted on this earlier this week in talking about drug testing, and we know a whole lot about it when we talk about workplace drug testing, when you're going in to get a job and you submit the urine screen and how your metabolites will show up for weeks or even, you know, months after ceasing use. And Paula Montano has been on many times to talk about how marijuana or THC metabolites will rise and fall despite your use rate. So it's a very inexact science. And that's when we're talking about workplace drug testing. Now, typically in workplace drug testing, they're submitting it to a much more accurate test than what the police are using out in the field. Let me just give you a couple of paragraphs here from this story. Raised in Montana and a resident of Alaska for 18 years, Robin Ray Brown, aged 48, always made time to explore in the wilderness. On March 20th, 2009, she parked her pickup truck outside Weston, Florida, and hiked off the beaten path along a remote canal and into the woods to birdwatch and commune with nature. I saw a bobcat and an osprey, she recalls. I stopped once in a nice spot beneath a tree, sat down, and gave prayers of thanksgiving to God. For that purpose, Robin had packed a clay bowl and a smudge stick, a stalk-like bundle of sage, sweetgrass, and lavender that she had bought at an airport gift shop in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Under the tree, she lit the end of the smudge stick and nestled it inside the bowl. She waved the smoke up toward her heart and over her head and prayed. Spiritual people from many cultures, including Native Americans, consider smoke to be sacred, she told me, and believe that it can carry their prayers to the heavens. As darkness approached, she returned to her pickup truck to find Broward County Deputy Sheriff Dominic Raimondi and Florida Fish and Wildlife's Lieutenant David Bingham looking inside her cab. The two men asked what she was doing, and when she said she had been bird watching, Bingham asked whether she had binoculars. As she opened her knapsack, Officer Raimondi spotted her incense and asked if he could see it. He took the bowl and incense, asking whether it was marijuana. "No," she recalls saying, "it's my smudge, which is a blend of sage, sweetgrass, and lavender." "Smells like marijuana to me," said Raimondi, who admitted he had never heard of a smudge stick. He then ordered Robin to stand by her truck while he took the incense back to his car and conducted a common field test known as the Duquesnoy-Levine, or DL test. The test was positive for marijuana. Robin protested, telling them the smudge was available for purchase online for about $7, and gave them the name of a website that sold it. Information Officer Bingham used his laptop to verify. But the men still searched her truck. After an hour and a half, they finally allowed Robin to go home, this 48-year-old woman, and told her that if a lab test confirmed the field test results, a warrant would be issued for her arrest. Exactly 90 days later, Robin was arrested at the spa in Western Florida where she had worked as a massage therapist for 3 years. She was handcuffed in front of clients and coworkers and charged with felony possession of marijuana. She was brought to a local police precinct in the town of Davie where she was booked and held for 3 hours. Unable to post the $1,000 bail because she was not allowed to call her boyfriend Michael, she was transferred to the Women's Correctional Facility in Pompano Beach. At no time was she read her rights. 5 hours after her arrest, she was finally allowed a brief phone call and left a message for Michael to post her bail. At the jail, a female officer came in and told Robin to take off all her clothes. She had already been searched at the precinct station and had her shoes, socks, and bra confiscated. "I'm on my period," she said. "I don't care," said the officer, who ordered her to pull down her underwear down to her ankles, squat over the floor drain, and cough. The following morning at 4:30 a.m., she was released onto the streets of Pompano Beach with no idea where she was. So this is how they're treating this 48-year-old woman who's out bird watching in the wilds of Florida with a smudge stick of sage and incense and sweetgrass. And I see these all the time out here in Oregon. It's a very common thing for people to have these smudge sticks and be having chants and drum circles and waving the sage. Personally, I kind of hate it. I don't like the smell of the stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, it's totally awful.
It's an awful smell. But hey, you know, to each their own, that's her right, you know, and by God, it's not illegal, right? She's doing something perfectly legal. Well, as you read through the rest of this article, this John Kelly, he's an expert in this stuff, and he goes and testifies in court all the time. He points out in the article how this the Duquesnoy test was developed in the late 1930s by a French pharmacist, and he claimed in the 1950s to the UN that it was very specific for marijuana. So the UN and crime labs around the world started using it as its preferred test for marijuana. But scientists throughout the 60s and 70s found that the DL test was nonspecific, which means it sometimes gives false positive. And it's still today, even from the 60s, we know this gives out false positives. It's still being used today as a common test in the field for marijuana, for which we arrest 847,000 people last year. Now, normally what would happen after a DL test gives the officer the idea that it might be marijuana, could be something else, but it might be marijuana. The next thing that's supposed to happen is supposed to be turned into a crime lab, which then does gas chromatography tests on us, spectral chromatography. Now, this is a test that can tell you for sure, pretty much, you know, within a point, you know, tiny, tiny bit, that it's an accurate test for marijuana. But what happens in some of these states is that test never gets done. That test is never done because these crime labs are overwhelmed with all the appeals and DNA evidence and everything they have to do with, everything you see on CSI New York and so on. They're so busy that to order a gas chromatography test for what is usually a misdemeanor amount of marijuana isn't worth anyone's time. So the constitutional rights of us cannabis consumers who are accused of having marijuana is being determined ipsy dixit, which is Latin for it is because I say it is, right? It's a cop going in there and saying, I did this test. And when they do this DL test, it's supposed to show a color of purple if the test agent is detected. But what's purple? What's lavender? What's violet? What's a little reddish purple? Well, that's all up to the officer to decide. He's got to make the decision looking at the color. And by God, you better hope your officer doesn't have red-green color blindness, right? But he's got to make that determination that that is marijuana. And as we can see from this case with Ms. Brown here, they can't tell a sage stick from a doob. They can't tell a bag of weed from a bag of oregano in some cases. Now, going back to Ms. Brown here, as they followed up on this, she got Mr. Kelly as her expert in court here. And she found out here that she didn't have to go to trial on the marijuana possession charges. They challenged this, and he has a whole bunch of court cases that are listed in the alternate article. But what they found out is that the sheriff's department never did that gas chromatography test to confirm. She was charged with a felony solely on the basis of the DL test and Officer Raimondi's opinion that a sage stick was weed. Now, the sheriffs did finally do the gas chromatography mass spectrometry test on the smudge stick, and of course it came out negative, right? But what was scary about this is in doing the investigations, they found out that the labs don't conduct the gas chromatography test until just before the trial because most marijuana possession defendants plea bargain before the trial. So we'll charge you with a felony. We can't really prove it. And the only proof we'll have for it is if you decide to fight us. So take the easy plea bargain now. Take that drug conviction now for the rest of your life on every job application you got to fill out. You're a drug felon for the rest of your life. Everybody can Google you and find out that you're a drug felon because your smudge stick came out as pot in some cheap ass test and they didn't bother to go get the real proof that you deserve in a court of law because you've already plea bargained out of it. So in truth, everyone who was arrested on marijuana charges has a constitutional right to the gas chromatography test. Otherwise, you are being denied your due process and a fair trial. This is so important for attorneys to learn this stuff, and I encourage everyone to check out the article on Alternet. It's by John Kelly. And the article is, let me get the exact title here so you can find it, has the most common marijuana test resulted in tens of thousands of wrongful convictions. It's a wonderful article. All the sites are in there that you need.
Yeah, we'll throw that on Twitter. We'll throw a link out.
We definitely will. He's also the author of a book, False Positives Equal False Justice, and the forthcoming book, How to Obtain a Pretrial Dismissal of Marijuana Charges or an Acquittal. And I sent him an email today, and we are hoping to get him on the show because I think that would be an excellent interview.
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. And I know so many people have been affected by these ridiculous drug tests that, you know, are so often, you know, being used to try to determine, you know, I told the story of the kids at the convenience store that worked down here.
Right.
They came up $1,800 short in their audit. So the company drug tested everyone because, you know, smoking pot makes you want to steal.
Yeah.
You gotta come on now.
Your freaking cheap drug habit.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of other things that we've picked up from Alternate, I want to encourage folks also to check out our blog, stash.normal.org. There's a great animation that's...
The flower,
yeah, that's up on Alternate. Did you see all that?
I did see it. I caught it.
Great little animation showing what would the world be like if we had a legal economy in cannabis and what the world is like now under prohibition. It's about 3 minutes long. I was going to play it on the show, but I was having some issues with the feed, so we're going to not do that. I've got all sorts of issues this week, I'm afraid. I had Max Headroom running the Skype.
Yeah, we had some crazy stuff go on.
Carrie's out? Oh, my goodness. But we love each and every one of you out there in the chat room, all of our listeners.
I think Carrie was just testing us, by the way, just to see if we could do it without her.
We can't do it without you, Carrie. We've got to have you back, darling. Next week, coming up on Normal Show Live, we will, of course, have our regular Wednesday interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, getting all your questions in. We're going to work out with Dr. Mitch and a special extended Dr. Mitch All-Star Jam.
Maybe during normal conference.
That's right. He'll be here for normal conference. If you want information on normal conference, check out normal.org/conference. We now have a special discount to chapters that are bringing five or more people. You're already getting the early bird pricing, which stays up until August 14th. If you get the chapter discount and you need that, just email me at stash@normal.org and I'll get you the discount code. For Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John and everybody at Normal Foundation, thanks for a great week. And next week we'll be here Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Tomorrow,
Cannabis Cafe.
And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
That was silly.
I know. Jinx, show me a Coke.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.